Blog Talk Radio.
Hasn't died yet. Welcome everyone to Eerie House. I am a host of sorts. I've been told, accused, indicted. Dale Kay from Spook Show, and today we're going to talk about. That's right. And that disembodied voice you hear here in the studio with me is Dave Binkley from Weirdness Really Bad Movie. Thanks, Dave, for joining me today.
Oh, I figured I'd better since I kind of suggested you should do this, so I thought I'd better going in.
Yeah, you brought it up. It's something I've talked about a few times in the past with other folks, and there's just not enough time to talk about it in a half hour, 45 minutes, an hour, 2 hours, because there's just so much to cover with these TV shows. What is on your TV? What do you like to watch in terms of, like, anthology shows or horror shows? And, I mean, we've covered stuff. I don't know that we'll touch a whole lot on Walking Dead or American Horror Story. We've covered those pretty extensively in the past. But there's so many of the shows from the 50s and 60s that I thought, and you, I think it's... You suggested that's kind of a good topic for us to talk about today, so here we are.
You know, I think it's interesting because you've got anthology shows. People never really do well in the ratings, but people watch them enough. If you consider something like Twilight Zone, as much as we think about that, they never cracked the top 30. That was probably one of the most viewed anthology shows out there.
Yeah, I mean, you look at it, it's almost always in syndication, or was in syndication when that's what they called it. I don't know if that's the same terminology today when it's on channels like Sci-Fi and other venues.
Yeah, TV is it? It won its time slot, but it never really did well in the ratings. And I think part of the reason it was Friday at 10 o'clock back in the early '60s, half the people went to bed.
Yeah, and I think some of the stories might have been too much for American viewers at that time, too. I mean, look at how deep some of the stories went and the cool twists in shows like Twilight Zone and their predecessors as well. But the folks that do like them... Go ahead, Dave.
I'm sorry. I think it's the music in there is kind of throwing me off. I think one of the reasons that a lot of people don't really tune into it, they like the ease and comfort of seeing the same characters every week in and week out. When you get a different story with a different person starring in it each week, it makes you think a little bit more. And I think when we turn to television, we don't necessarily usually want to be challenged.
Some of us are anyway, but I digress. I know I am. Very challenged, but I think that's the fun of it though now, and maybe today's viewers are a bit more sophisticated than the viewers of the 50s and the 60s and even into the 70s. Hopefully, open to more shows of that nature. To me, that's what I, you know, that not ease of not seeing the same. Characters over and over and a new, brand new, fresh story every episode. I think to me that's one of the things that drew me.
I agree. And, you know, when you talked about how so many of the early shows actually derived from just as many television shows did derive from a radio program, Suspense, Lights Out, programs like that that were anthology shows straight from radio.
Yeah, and I think they built on the success of those things, and really at this point we're talking about the roots of horror hosting, from the ghost shows of the theaters to the hosted radio shows. Those are the very roots, I think, of the modern horror host, and hopefully we'll get to talk about that next week at Monster Fest Mania. And by the way, listeners, If you want to win tickets to Monster Fest Mania, give us a call now at 646-378-0264 and get your ticks for Monster Fest Mania for free. Otherwise, you're going to get whacked at the door. I mean, fair enough. It's a great show, and it's very, very affordable for the type of show it's going to be. I think it's a very good value, but if you can get in free, why not? So call us again at 646-378-0264 to win your tickets. And, yeah, I think it's all about the storytelling, and I think that's the root of what a horror host is a storyteller. You're presenting a movie, whether you're mocking the film because it's poorly made or sharing some facts about it for your sheer love of the genre, whatever the case may be, you're a storyteller, you're a host,
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, many of these shows had something of a host on radio. You had the Hermit's Cave, you had the guy who did the Inner Sanctum Mysteries, you had the Whistler, you know, the TV shows too. They had certain, either a disembodied voice, like Outer Limits, or you had a bona fide visible host like Rod Serling for Twilight Zone.
Yeah. It's just that coming to, and I think what's even more amazing when you can go online and look at some of the live science fiction they did from like 1950 and 51, and you're wondering, how the heck are they going to take you to the Mars, you know, in 1951? They did. It was just absolutely amazing. I think one, I said, I'm thinking Appointment on Mars had Leslie Nielsen and a guy named Robert Keith Jr., who later, after the series, called himself Brian Keith. So, the interesting things that he did with a lot of, you know, Paul Newman got one of his early speaking roles on television on that series, and but you still had Boris Karloff appearing, a young Darren McGavin. You had James Dean as a scientist, Rob Steiger, you know, just, and that's the great thing, you know, when you look at Twilight Zone today and you look at all the people that starred in that who were struggling actors, look 10 years before that at Tales of Tomorrow.
Yeah. It's fantastic. You get to see, oh, gosh, so many that you mentioned just starting out in their careers. Folks who later went on to do their own anthology-type shows, like Darren McGavin, appeared, I believe, in an early episode of Lights Out, if I'm not mistaken, and later went on to do his own.
The Tales of Tomorrow, and he did the Chaney Vase on Alfred Hitchcock Presents. So he was there quite a bit, yeah.
Yeah, and then he went on, of course, to... Well,
he went on, of course,
to do Kolchak the Night Stalker.
One of the great monster-chasing series of all time. And every week it was a different creature. I'm trying to think. Richard Matheson, who was probably wrote the second most amount of Twilight Zones, worked on both the Night Stalker movie and the Night Strangler movie. They offered him the opportunity to work on this weekly series. He said, "You got to be nuts." Yeah, so we had enough trouble coming up with a second creature, let alone a new creature every week.
Yeah. You know, I really enjoyed Kolchak when it was a new show. Some of the effects were not that great, but the stories were really good, and the character development I thought was really, really good. You know, Darren McGavin's a very good actor, but the guy who played Vincenzo, the boss.
He played so well off of Simon Oakland.
Yeah, his boss, Vincenzo. Simon Oakland. and some of the other characters, I thought that was what really made the show, the dichotomy between those two characters. But where the effects failed, much like shows from the 60s, the execution and the stories kind of overwhelmed that for me and made it enjoyable.
Right. The budgets were constraining on that. Back in the 60s, Outer Limits, they were creating television special effects to make it work. They make a negative print of something that was happening to make certain things happen. Where some of that stuff was there, but I think the budget was so low on the Kolchak, the Night Stalker, that it just I think that's where some of the problem came in with that show.
Yeah. Real quick, I want to offer a brief apology to folks listening in the, listening live. I know Evil Annie Repert's listening, and Professor Feather, I guess at the beginning of the show they had difficulty hearing. There has been some changes, and I've heard other hosts having issues with Blog Talk Radio. So my apologies if you missed the first part of the show. I'm hoping that everything will be fine if you go back into the archive to listen to the beginning. But Professor Feather tells us he can hear fine now, so that's cool.
Well, it was to his advantage. Probably didn't hear us early on, but that's okay.
or any of it. I've only recently been exposed. I've exposed myself, if you will.
Cover up, Dale.
Yeah, really. No, to the classic 50s shows. I mean, I've seen bits and pieces, an episode here, an episode there, but I've really kind of committed myself for reasons that will become evident in the near future to shows like Lights Out and Tales of Tomorrow. I'm very familiar with The Veil. I did happen to watch a lot of those as well as One Step Beyond.
You know what they call that? The greatest show that was never seen. Something like that.
Yeah.
Because it was they shot, technically there are 9 episodes, but they shot 8 episodes, 8 episode pilot. And the Hal Roach studio went broke, and it's kind of interesting because the director that they named on there said he doesn't remember working on it, and Boris Karloff said he never got paid for any of it. And not only did he host it, but he starred in the episodes as well.
They must have filmed a few more because for some reason I have 11 episodes of them.
Wow, okay. But see,
yeah.
Some of them, like the Jack the Ripper one in that, which they also use as a second episode of the Hammer series that didn't get off the ground either. It was supposed to be with ABC, the Tales of Frankenstein. It's also included in that batch as a second episode, the one about the guy who can see Jack the Ripper or sees who Jack the Ripper is.
Yeah, it's no surprise to me because that happens to be my favorite episode of The Veil. Very well done. It's a neat and interesting story, so wanting to save that one really makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, except that is one of the few that Karloff wasn't in. That's why I think that may have been done by Howard Studios, but it wasn't part of really the original offering that they were working on with Karloff.
Well, I did not know that, and much like you say, it's an education listening to this show. I mean, between our hosts and the guests, and even callers will sometimes share something with us that we just didn't know. So it's fun, and that's part of the reason I do this, the educational aspect. I'm always learning new things, and each week that I do a little research on these, I find out little factoids I didn't know.
You know, and Professor Feather mentioned out how One Step Beyond came out and kind of creeped him out. And it is John Newland did such a wonderful job of producing and hosting that series. In a sense, that was set up like the Veil, where it was basically supposed to be all based on some true psychic events.
Yeah, or they're set up that way. I don't know if that's a device to get people interested, or if that's actually factual research of doing that. But they did present it that way, that these are things that really happen.
Well, and that makes you want to watch it more, I would think. But
absolutely.
You know, that is one of the cool things. He mentioned again the theme music, and when you think of that in the four notes of the Twilight Zone Theater and the Outer Limits. These themes are so instantly recognizable, you know what you're in for.
Funny you should mention that. There's a wonderful band, I don't believe they're together anymore, but they're called the Original Onions. They're from the Columbus area. And they've given me permission to use their music. I love it because it's instrumental, number one. You know, it makes great backdrop for skits and so forth. I started the show with Onions a Go-Go today.
Okay.
But they, as I was researching their music, and they gave me full permission to use it for my different ventures, you know, I listened to one called Fear, and I'd like you to listen to it. It's very
okay.
interesting.
Yeah, I wonder what they based this on.
Yeah. Well, like I said, it's funny that you mentioned that was creepy and that.
Oh, yeah, that's what Professor Feather said as well. Yeah, that's a.
And he clearly agrees with us that you know, based on real events. But yeah, that music scared me as well. I think I'm maybe even a little bit younger than Professor Feather, around the same age, and it had the same effect on me. This is like a cool jazz version of it, so to speak. And when I was researching their stuff and heard this, I'm like, oh my gosh, that's from One Step Beyond. Now, I don't know if that's the real name of the piece or if they renamed it for their purposes, but the... On the one album they released, this cut is called Fear.
The Ventures released a version of that as well.
I wonder if that inspired the Onions, because they seem to have been influenced by the Ventures, and that's why
I like them. I can hear that a little bit in there, you know, the way they play their guitars there, yeah.
Mm-hmm. The big difference is they do, in some of their pieces, they use a lot of saxophone and some electronica, but... it does have a very 60s twangy, beachy, garage bandy sort of sound, and I love that stuff. I think that's, and I'm sure I'm influenced by The Ghoul and Ghoulardi and Big Chuck, but I just think that's so horror hosty to have this kind of music.
Yeah,
back to our topic.
Mentioned a lot, even though we talked about Karloff and. Veil, he hosted The Veil and acted in it, was his Thriller Theater, which ran essentially the same era as the Twilight Zone did. A full hour stories. And I think he did, it was on for 2 years, I think, and he did two episodes a season, acted in them as well as hosting them.
Just like in The Veil.
Yes, yes. But... He always had a little gimmick he would do. I think probably picking up kind of like on Hitchcock did, introducing them, and always promising us a thriller, you know. So.
Now, do you recall watching those?
I don't recall watching those. I do have every episode on DVD right now. I didn't really catch them until a while back. Sci-Fi Channel played them late on like a Friday night. Technically, it was probably Saturday morning. And I absolutely fell in love with them because I've always loved Karloff anyway. But the episodes are very well written. It's hard to write an hour show like that on a weekly basis. And I thought they did an excellent job of carrying it off.
Yeah, I have to admit I have seen very, very little of Thriller. I wonder if they struggled for the same reason the Twilight Zone did. Series 4 is so difficult to find when Twilight Zone decided to do hour-long shows. Notably, on Netflix right now, they have Twilight Zone. They have seasons 1, 2, 3, and 5 are free to watch, but you have to pay to watch season 4. And in my searches throughout various video stores that still carry DVD, it's difficult, nigh impossible, to find the fourth season of Twilight Zone.
I have the entire series on when they released them individually, so you know it wasn't like I got the whole collection. I bought them then. I just bought them a disc at a time, and they had some of the hour-long ones mixed in. You know why there were the hour-long episodes, right?
No, tell me.
Well, after the third season, Twilight Zone was actually canceled, just like Star Trek was canceled. And when the fourth season would have been, and CBS was gearing up its schedule, they had some shows that didn't do as well. Rod Serling actually had gone back to teaching in college and was contacted by CBS for, you know, to, if he would be interested in bringing it back. But they thought maybe if it were an hour long, they could get more viewers. And so they brought it back. And even though the hour-long episodes, it was technically half season, but in today's standards, I think it was 18 or 20 episodes of the full one-hour versions. And they, you know, they didn't play quite as well being an hour, although when you have episodes like on Thursday We Leave for Home, I think that's one of my favorite one-hour-long episodes that they did. So they decided to bring it back a fifth season, and then the ratings were that much lower that was pretty much it. And I think Rob is kind of burned out from that particular anyway. ABC contacted him. He wanted to do something a little different with Rod Serling's Wax Museum, where he was flying on a helicopter. ABC wanted it a little simpler than that, so he kind of disappeared until the Night Gallery, as far as episodic television like that.
Yeah, and thankfully he did come back with the Night Gallery, and I thought that was a nice vehicle, too, to introduce each story with a painting.
Wonderful, and that's kind of what he had envisioned in Rod Serling's Wax Museum. Professor Feather put up there, didn't Thriller also have a comic book? Yeah, well, Dale, you know more about comic books than I do, but I know there was a comic book. Based
Gold Key did the Thriller comic.
So yeah, it was, and I think by reaching across multimedia, that's how some programs, that's why they always have a chance for a revival, you know.
Mm-hmm. Another show that had, you know, I brought up Gold Key Comics, and Professor Feather's mentioning Boris Karloff's Tales of Mystery. And other things that that they printed, you know, kind of in his name.
Right.
Another comic book that they did that there was a TV show based on, and I guess it had elements of horror, and it was Ripley's Believe It or Not. They told short horror stories, but the show itself, Ripley's Believe It or Not, had things of the unusual that I think appealed to horror fans.
I would think so. Again, that was, in a sense, an anthology program. And it dates back to comic strips, you know, when Robert Ripley was originally making them.
Yeah. And what a great host they got in Jack Palance.
It was. Yes, it was.
Mm-hmm. If you could go back in time, what decade, and you had to pick a decade to visit, which decade would you revisit to watch anthology shows, would you say?
You know what? I would pretty much have to say, if I had to pick a particular decade, it would probably be the 60s. They had, you know, because that's when you had Thriller on. You had Alfred Hitchcock Presents on, which at that point was the Alfred Hitchcock Hour. You had One Step Beyond, and you had The Twilight Zone and Outer Limits.
Mm-hmm.
What more could you ask for?
Oh, I know. Not to mention the two comedy shows, you know, you had the 60s was really good for that because you had you had the Munsters, you had the Addams Family, you had the
yes.
dawn of science fiction on TV with shows like Star Trek and Lost in Space.
Irwin Allen lived on television for quite a while. And my favorite of his was, yeah, there was Land of the Giants, but my favorite of his was The Time Tunnel.
I loved The Time Tunnel. What a great show that was, and granted they had, you know, the same characters, Tony and Doug, James Darren, and I forget the gentleman's name that played Doug.
Robert Colbert.
Robert Colbert, yeah. And then you had Lee Merriweather and Whit Bissell working back in our time.
Yeah.
But it was, again, a great vehicle to visit. Each show kind of was self-contained because each show they visited a different era of history and had their adventures there.
And they had the magic of the entire MGM library to go any place and be anywhere, and that could be the background of it.
Mm-hmm.
Why some of the big battles and war scenes that they had and stuff, where you could see thousands of people when you queued in, you saw a dozen, you know, it's because they were able to use the MGM library of their films.
Yeah, great stock footage. They even used some of the classic stock footage that's been used in so many films with the overgrown lizards fighting.
Yeah.
when they went into prehistory. Yeah,
yeah.
That was a fun show, and I did like Land of the Giants, but I felt it was almost like too much of a pastiche of Lost in Space. I mean, they had the one passenger who was kind of your Dr. Smith pain in the butt type. You know what I mean? And
but when it was in black and white, Smith was actually a villain.
Yeah, and I love that.
As it went on, they had to expand his role, so they turned him into a coward.
Yeah.
A greedy coward.
Yes. But those were fun. But having lived through those myself and having experienced the vast majority of those, I didn't see Thriller, but having watched the other shows when they were new, I think I'd rather go back to the 50s, and I'd like to experience on television what it was like. Excuse me, to watch Lights Out, Suspense, Climax, all those shows, and the offshoot shows too. I mean, there were some great things. This Is Your Life, they covered Boris Karloff. If you ever get a chance to see that, it's very heartwarming. And if you want to have, it's not exactly horror, but if you want to have a good cry, you got to see This Is Your Life, Lou Costello.
Yes, yes. And a lot of it was about his family.
Yeah. And what a guy, and what a strong guy he is. And there was a thing that struck me personally, too, because this was at a period just after Bud and Lou reconnected. They had broken up. And so, and you can imagine that kind of struck a chord with me.
Yeah, yeah.
There's other great shows, too, with Red Skelton. He had hosts like Peter Lorre, and, of course, Vincent Price popped up everywhere.
Yes, yes. I'm trying to think that outside of the House of Brightonstone, which was Canadian, was Price ever in regular? Oh, you know, he did Super Train, I think it was, in the early 70s for NBC. I'm trying to think of any other weekly show on television that Price did.
Television, no. Radio, yes. I know he played, believe it or not, he played the Saint on on radio.
And he was fabulous in this. You could tell he was having so much fun. And what's funny, when he couldn't appear, Tom Conway would be in his stead. They'd give him the same lines, and you wouldn't get a laugh out of him. But when Vincent Price would say them, you'd get a laugh out of them. And that was so different from many of the horror roles that he was playing in the movies and elsewhere, that he really had to love doing the Saint.
Yeah. Oh, man, I'll tell you, with only 2 minutes left, folks, if you want to call in, how's that?
That can't be only 2 minutes left.
Yeah, there's 90 seconds now. Not too late. Call in for tickets for Monster Fest Mania. It is next weekend, Friday and Saturday, the 29th and 30th of July. Call 646-378-0264. Quick, do it now. In fact, I'm quite sure Dave and I will be talking a little bit in the recorded but not broadcast portion of the archive.
We'll both be there.
If you call in and during that period, I believe I can pick up and you can get your free tickets. And off to Monster Fest Mania you go for free. You can get in for free. We're going to have to do this topic again. I still feel like we've really only scratched the surface. There's just
maybe
a lot to cover.
Maybe we need to concentrate on a particular show or something.
Yeah, I mean, we've done that. I've done that with other people in the past, and that's certainly going to be in the works. Next week, I got a very, very special guest. Next week's show is going to be on Sunday, however, due to my obligations at Monster Fest Mania. And recording artist Robbie Gennett just came out with a great, great song that he shared with me. And his publicist shared with me, and it's called Come Down. And if you haven't heard it or seen it, I guess that's the rest of the regular time when we go into the recorded, not live portion. For some reason, the audio goes crazy. But Robbie Gennett, his publicist, Scott Essman, shared with me the video, and I just fell in love with it right away. It's like a love story that a vampire is telling in the song, and the video is great. If you're listening here in the archive, go to the Erie House Facebook page or the Dale K. Spook Show Facebook page, and you can see what that's all about. And he'll be on 1 week from tomorrow, Sunday, same time, 6:30 p.m. Eastern, right here on Erie House Radio.
Fabulous. More things to learn.
Yeah. And hopefully Blog Talk will straighten out their glitches. It's been very weird and shaky, so I want to apologize to any listeners who had difficulty at the beginning.
What I have to do is reload it, and it seems to work better once I reload it.
Yeah. Every once in a while, Blog Talk gets a little glitchy, so what are you going to do?
Hey, that's the marvels of the electronic age, you know?
But over the last 4 years that I've been using it, it's been pretty durable and sturdy and worthwhile. I have a lot of watching to do on this 50s stuff. I'm just falling in love with it right now.
Yeah, and you know what? There's one that it isn't. I have a copy of all the episodes. I bought them off the internet, but they're not in public domain. Science Fiction Theater is really interesting, Dale. Again, that's another one that I learned during the late night when they showed The Invisible Man and they showed the Thriller Theater. They also had the Science Fiction Theater. Very interesting show, but that is not in public domain. One of the major studios, I think, still holds rights to that.
I'll have to break down and buy them. And having said that, Dave, you brought up a real good point. That's another thing I think that I really like about these anthology shows is it gives the producers of these shows the opportunity to present classic or weird or unusual tales, some far less known than others. A great example, one of the best examples, is Occurrence at Owl Creek Bridge. The Twilight Zone episode.
And that's the only one I do not think in generally is usually included in most packages, because Rod didn't actually do that one. That was, I think it was season two or season three. I think it was season two. They were running a little over budget, so some of them they actually shot onto videotape, then filmed from kind of like a kinescope type deal, and which would be like the Night of the Meek with Art Carney. And the only reason he wrote that because he wanted to see Art Carney play Santa Claus. the one that Jack Carson did about the Nothing But the Truth, the car salesman that had to tell the truth. There were about four episodes that they did onto videotape, which they then put onto film. And the Occurrence at Owl Creek, which had won the Cannes Film Festival for short.
I think it was from France as well.
It was from France as well. And so interesting that it didn't have any speaking, because that way Rod could just, in a sense, he stood by the camera and introduced it and shared it with everyone. And what's funny is back in the day of the video cassette, that was the one episode you could buy, because technically that wasn't owned by CBS and Rod Serling, so somehow that episode sort of, at the time at least, drifted off into public domain.
Yeah, and so many Twilight Zones and other shows, too, were written by the great science fiction and horror writers like Richard Matheson. You see his name popping up in credits on a lot of these.
You know, how many times are they going to redo his I Am Legend story from the, you know, from Last Man on Earth, from Vincent Price back to to the Charlton Heston, to I have two more versions of I Am Legend.
Yeah, you got Omega Man with Charlton Heston, as you mentioned, right. And then of course the Will Smith version,
which is what most people are familiar with, and of course most people are familiar with Last Man on Earth, although they didn't realize that was basically Richard Matheson's story as well.
Yeah. My son ran to our local library here in Wellington, Ohio, and after we had done Last Man on Earth on Spook Show, he ran to the library. He was compelled to read the I think it's a novelette. You can't really call it a short story.
Yeah.
A lot of films were made off of good sci-fi stories. Like The Thing was from a story called Who Goes There. So many interesting things. and on a side note,
several Rod Serling's Twilight Zones were based on short stories that he was had read and had liked.
Yes,
he wrote the episode, but many of them were based on particular short stories. I do like.
Well, he was
a good
writer in his own right.
Was.
But
Richard, I think it's so interesting, you know. He wrote the second most amount of Twilight Zones. He did the two Night Stalker movies, The Night Stalker and The Night Strangler, and he did What Dreams May Come. Absolutely wonderful. You've seen that one, right, Dale?
It's been a long, long time.
Yeah, and the reason it didn't do well, even it was, is that the entire movie dealt with death, and I think most people don't want to go to the movies to deal with death. And
that was with Robin Williams, wasn't it?
Robin Williams, yeah.
Equally,
and his journey through hell when he gave up was just absolutely amazing.
Yeah, very Faustian.
Yeah, yes. So Richard Matheson, I think by many aspects, was almost... Most people didn't even know who he was because he never went in front of the camera.
I found out something very interesting quite by accident. You know that Pierre Boulle wrote Planet of the Apes?
Yes.
Okay, a Frenchman. Great story. We talked about it last week and the unusual ending it had. About a year and a half ago, the wife and I purchased an African gray parrot. Now, they're the smartest bird out there. They have the intelligence of perhaps even a four-year-old, and they are not only able to learn a great deal of words, you know, a very large vocabulary, but they're absolutely perfect mimics, where a lot of your talking birds have a birdie-like sound to their voice, and you know, like the old cartoons would have us believe, cracker, probably want a cracker. These birds, you would swear that the person or the thing that they're imitating is right there in the room. This particular one is very, very intelligent. I now think I have four cats instead of three. one with the ability to sound like the other three. But what the heck were we watching? Oh, the Breakfast Club came on.
Okay.
And at one point, I believe the kids started whistling Bridge on the River Kwai. Okay?
Yes.
Well, the bird picked it up right away. he can do a couple stanzas of Bridge on the River Kwai, which in turn inspired me to watch the film because I hadn't seen it in years. Alec Guinness is in it. Oh, my gosh, I think the last time I watched it with my father, who's been deceased almost 30 years now. So I was compelled to watch this film and discovered that Pierre Boulle wrote it.
I didn't realize that. Okay.
Yeah. And, of course,
My father-in-law was actually serving in Korea, and he was used as one of the extras as they were doing some of the filming over there.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
What a dark ending. I knew it had something of a dark ending.
Yeah.
But it was darker than I recall. If you haven't seen it, I'm not going to play spoiler today, but
it's definitely worth another trip to the library. That's for sure. Or Netflix. If you have Netflix, I don't.
It is on Netflix, and it's a very unsettling ending, as one might expect. These TV shows are great. Is there any of these old TV shows that you'd like to see that you haven't in a long, long time or is extremely difficult to obtain?
You talked about the Lights Out, and there's not a whole lot. Hopefully some more of those will be released because, again, they're mostly, what, filmed in the kinescope, right? They were filmed off of a television. And Tales of Tomorrow, I marvel. Knowing what the technology was for television in 1950, which was almost nothing, what they were able to do, I thought that is what is amazing. Not necessarily, and they were good stories too.
Keep your eyes on Erie House Facebook page for some announcements coming up, I think you might get some opportunities to see some Lights Out.
There are on archive.org, but not as many as I'd like.
No, there's only like 30-some, but, I mean, that show ran for a while. It ran for a few years, so there's a lot more that that we're not seeing. And I do believe even the ones that are not obtainable on Internet Archive are public domain.
To me, I would have been a little disappointed Arch Obler didn't have more to do with the series. But there was the Dead Man's Code or something like that that Basil Rathbone was in. I love that one. That's a great episode.
I'm glad you mentioned Arch Obler. I learned very late in life to appreciate him. I'm a huge fan of his movie Five
and his influence on
the early radio shows like Lights Out.
He and Willis Cooper created it as a 15-minute series, and I think it didn't air till like midnight. Most stations were off the air. Willis Cooper left to do other things on his own, and he did other series like Quiet Please was a series he did for 2 or 3 years. We completely wrote and produced each half-hour episode for 2 complete radio seasons. Arch Obler went on to overtake the Lights Out and the stories he did, and again, like Rod Serling hosting them himself, just added to the eeriness of it, I think.
Yeah, he had a good voice for that kind of thing. I had satellite radio in my car for a while, and having a very, very long commute, it was such a thrill when those shows would synchronize with my trip because I got to hear some stuff that I was never exposed to previously. And again, being in a position to share, that's something too. There are a good number of radio shows that are in the public domain. So I would ask my audience to look forward to some growth here with the radio channel, and some opportunities to hear some things you may have never heard before.
Radio is one. I just even when you talked earlier about the old Inner Sanctums, and Raymond the host and the stories there. Produced and directed by Hyman Brown, who went on to do this CBS Radio Mystery Theater 7 nights a week for, 9 years? Most people don't know what the name of the show was, but they do remember the show being on late at night on their radios.
You're so well-read. Thanks for doing all the homework for today's show. You're very well-read on this stuff.
I've always loved radio, radio drama, radio comedy, and it just when you love.
When you suggested this last week, I just knew that your heart was really in this stuff, and
I love anthology shows. They're just because they challenge you, Dale. They challenge you, and it's something that most shows don't really do, and that's why a lot of shows that come out now, it's the offbeat ones that I like when Forever was on 2 seasons ago. It's such a unique premise. The guy couldn't die, and every time he was killed, he came back up naked in water, which left him a lot of explaining to do usually.
Kind of like Schwarzenegger in Terminator. He's naked again.
Yeah.
Well, listeners, thanks for joining us in the archive here. There's probably about 15 seconds left. I want to thank you for listening to Erie House Radio, and I especially want to thank my guest, Dave Binkley from Weirdness Really Bad Movie. You will come back, I hope.
Oh, you betcha.
Ah, good, good. You add a whole lot to the show, and you saved me a lot of homework this week with the upcoming events next week. I will see you personally at Monster Fest Mania at the Quaker Station in Akron. That's July 29th and 30th in Akron, Ohio.